Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So no listener intro today, just your standard smorgasbord of tennis greats. Listener intros will be back. If you want to Banksy yourself a listener intro, there is one more week left to do so. That is when our Kickstarter campaign closes in a week's time. We've hit our target. We're delighted about that. We are overwhelmed and thankful for all of the support that you've shown. But if you want to bag yourself an intro, a shout out, take us on in the predictions. I think there's one pet mascot slot still open. Then you can do so for 1 week more. Hello Bentley, our weekly pet mascot for this week. He's a lovely Hungarian Vizsla puppy. Speaking of puppies, apologies once again for any sound effects that may accompany, hopefully, just the opening stages of this podcast. Billie Jean has been placed in Guantanamo and she's looking at me very pathetically at the moment, but I'm certain she'll settle down and realise it's not so bad after all. David, how are you doing?
I'm all right. Yeah, no, I'm fine. I am struggling to watch all the tennis that's happened, and now I'm going to go to zero, which is the next 2 weeks. So I find that a bit jarring, but, you know, it's a pandemic. But you should just, you know, accept that, really.
It is indeed a pandemic. Matt, how are you doing?
Yes, okay, thank you. A lot of mixed emotions, I think. Excited for the tennis to come, kind of sad we can't be there, nervous about it. Could it go wrong still? There's a lot going on at the moment. It's still an uncertain time.
Yeah, how is everyone feeling about all the social media selfies of tennis players on planes to Australia? I'm
not
just
great.
Experiencing crippling FOMO. Anybody else?
Yeah,
I'm a bit irritated. but to be honest, I suppose at least they're on the planes and they're going, and that sort of suggests that tennis events are getting closer and the Australian Open is getting closer. The news that we've had this morning, I found harder to hear and stomach and feel positive about.
Okay, I was coming to that, David. We were doing chit chat before the big news bombshell.
Well, I'm just telling you my answer. That's it.
Well, Matt, we'd better go in with the news before we get your answer, because otherwise we'll look like teasers, thanks to David Law. Andy Murray, we're hearing the news this morning, has tested positive for COVID-19 and is isolating and quarantining at his home in Surrey. Now, what this means for his travel to the Australian Open, we just don't know at the moment. He obviously won't be able to get one of those charter flights, which are leaving today. Many of them have already left, in fact. But we understand that discussions are ongoing with Craig Tiley and the Australian authorities, and he still hopes to be able to travel to Melbourne. But exactly how and when, and even if, is very much up in the air.
Yeah, it's jarring, isn't it? And I mean, it comes off the back of Tennis Sangren. I was struggling to follow his story overnight. I mean, you can perhaps fill in a few details of it, but I mean, basically they've got their set of rules, which we know about, and then different occurrences are happening, and Andy Murray's tested positive, but it seems like it was some days ago. So he's got a period of time before that he must isolate and test negative before getting on the plane. But then you assume he still needs to do the 2-week quarantines. And I suppose really you're looking at what, a week in hand, if you consider the pre-Australian Open events. That, I mean, I guess you could miss those events and just go straight into the Australian Open. Maybe you can fit that in still. It's not ideal at the very least, but it just makes you feel a bit uncomfortable just not knowing where we stand, really. I don't really know what the rules are now.
Yeah, well, just to fill you in on that Tennis Sangren situation, an article in The Guardian this morning, US tennis player Tennis Sangren flying to Australian Open despite positive COVID test. The American says he first tested positive in November, and tournament organisers argue he's therefore not infectious. So he is on a flight bound for Melbourne as we speak, I think. Tennis Australia reportedly intervened so he could board that charter flight despite testing positive for COVID-19 in a series of tweets. And it was quite bizarre how it all emerged via this series of tweets. Sangren initially suggested he would not be able to board the flight for the Australian Open, writing, quote, COVID positive over Thanksgiving, which of course was the end of November last year, and COVID positive on Monday. Later, Sangren, a quarterfinalist at last year's Open, added it appeared he would be able to board the chartered flight before lauding the Tennis Australia chief executive Craig Tiley as a wizard. He then explained his first positive test was in November and he was now, quote, totally recovered. I was sick in November, totally healthy now. There's not a single documented case where I would be contagious at this point. And the Australian Open suggested Victorian health authorities had given Sangren the all clear to fly. The tournament's official Twitter account said people who had recovered and were non-infectious can continue to shed the virus for several months. Victorian government public health experts assess each case based on additional detailed medical records to ensure they're not infectious before checking into the charter flights. Players and their teams are tested every day from their arrival in Australia, a much stricter process than for anyone else in hotel quarantine. So whether he will, if he continues to test positive upon arrival, whether he will be allowed out for the 5 hours per day. I mean, there are still questions to be answered, Reed Tennis Sangren. My big question is, who is his practice partner supposed to be? Because I'd be making calls if I were that person. The story is somewhat complicated by the fact that it's Tennis Sangren, somebody that is very outspokenly opposed to COVID-19 regulations and restrictions. And that makes you not want to be sympathetic with him over this. That makes you, well, it certainly makes me feel uncomfortable with the rules being flexed to allow him to play. But I suppose you have to trust the medical professionals in this case. I mean, it's disconcerting that they are medical professionals who haven't specifically examined him. It's a quagmire, isn't it? It's a real quagmire.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they put out a statement, the Australian Open, about Tennis Sangren in particular. But I still don't completely understand the rules. And now I think that they probably need to, when they make a verdict on Andy Murray, for instance, or anybody else who has the situation, they need to find a way to just make it very clear exactly, and not to people like us. I particularly feel for the people from Australia who are trying to get back to Australia, who are saying they're stranded overseas. You know, and actually the last line of the Australian Open statement is this one about players will undergo a more rigorous testing schedule than most returning travellers. You know, I think that's an important point. But at the same time, you can imagine the locals just thinking, well, you're bending over backwards for all these tennis players. And what about us? Why don't you do that for us?
And you're also, with this rule flex, implicitly saying that the results of tests are not binding and are not gospel and are not the only evidence on which we make our case-by-case basis decisions, which will allow for situations where players test positive and players will test positive, and certainly team members will test positive. 1,500 people coming in, 1,500 plus, people are going to test positive and they'll say, but I've got no symptoms, or I had it in November. I can't possibly be positive and infectious now. These sorts of things and situations are going to arise, I think, and it's going to get messy, inevitably.
Yeah, it seems like they did have two very clear rules, which were you have to be on a chartered flight and you have to return a negative test. And they've had two incidents now which are making those rules difficult, and they've broken one of them in terms of, we know that Tennis Sengren has returned a positive test. I trust the medical assessment of the doctors, but that rule has been broken and Tennis Sengren is on a flight to the Australian Open. The question is now whether they will break that second rule about the chartered flight and Andy Murray. We heard, I think, that Carlos Moya won't be going to the Australian Open to be with Rafael Nadal because he's not travelling at the moment, and that will mean he's missed the chartered flight, so he's not going. What do they do about Andy Murray? It feels like they can't have it both ways to me. I think they had these rules in place. They were, to me, they seemed like good rules. But as at the first point of them being a little bit tricky, it kind of feels like they've folded a little bit. And I find that a little bit problematic, especially, as you say, David, with already tennis players being prioritised ahead of Australian residents and exemptions being made. It's a messy, uncomfortable situation.
I think the only thing for it is to charter a plane just for Andy Murray. The bigger, the better, just for the lols. Some sort of Airbus A380. Andy Murray in business, Jamie Delgado in the back, living it up in the whole of economy, just running up and down the aisles.
What is it about Andy Murray in the Australian Open?
Yeah.
It's does feel like... can play it without an event happening, you know, without some drama. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, what is it about Andy Murray full stop? I mean, guy can't catch a break, can he? I mean, yeah. So that's kind of your overnight breaking news.
Yeah, and get well soon too. I mean, yeah. I don't think he's unwell, is he? But, you know,
we've heard he's in good health. Whether that means he's got mild symptoms or he's asymptomatic, I don't know. But certainly reports are that he's not, you know, stricken with it badly at this stage. But, yeah, absolutely. We wish him well. And, gosh, we wish Kim well as well, because she presumably is homeschooling three kids on her own now, with her husband stuck in a bedroom in a different portion of the house. And we wish all of you well if you're homeschooling. David came on the call this morning with a slightly ashen complexion, might I say, David. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I mean, enjoying it immensely, but yes. Some of the printing rules for my son's schoolwork, we've got a bit mixed up about our timings, and so yes, he's made a little entrance to the podcast room.
Yes, Catherine and I were witness to a slightly tense exchange,
little bit tetchy, some scolding for sarcasm.
Yeah.
So yes, if you're homeschooling, I mean, frankly, if you're struggling in any way, which I'm sure you are, who isn't at the moment? Billie Jean certainly is. She's making her presence felt. She's getting closer and closer to scaling those walls. I'm anxious about. Oh my God, her head was over the top then. Yeah, we are we're thinking of you. We are. And yeah, we're going to be in your ears throughout. Talking about tennis for now, of course, there's going to be a 2-week hiatus of live tennis. Don't worry. We've got plenty to entertain you in the meantime, not least Billie Jean King week. Yes.
You were going to say
Billie Jean King. Billie Jean. See, she's quieting down now. That's all
Billie
she wanted
Jean
to
hear.
Billie
Jean to the rescue. That's been going on for the last 70-odd years. And, now we've got another one who wants to get in on the act.
Billie Jean King week is next week, starting from Monday. And then it is Australian Open relived week. So don't you worry, folks. We've got you covered for the next 2 weeks of quarantine hiatus. And, of course, we'll have Andy Murray tries to get to Australia news for however long that might keep us entertained for.
That could be some saga, couldn't it?
Yeah. I can already see writ large on David's face, emergency podcast, emergency podcast. Right then, but for now, we're going to relish and revel in the fact that we have actual tennis to talk about. We have finals, we have results, we have trophies being lifted. It's all glorious. We have Aryna Sabalenka, who for once has picked up where she left off at the end of the previous season. She's started this year with the title 6-2, 6-2 in the final in Abu Dhabi over Kudermetova. So that's three successive titles now. Ostrava! Gosh, I was worried I'd woken the beast then. Ostrava, Linz, and at the end of last season, and Abu Dhabi now. It's a 15-match winning streak. And that's included wins over Coco Gauff, Jennifer Brady, Victoria Azarenka, Lise Mertens, Ons Jabeur, Maria Sakkari, and now Kudermetova, who was victorious over Marta Kostyuk in the semi-finals. You sold me a dud there, Matt. More of that in a moment. So she's done something here, Sabalenka, that she's not done before in terms of picking up where she left off the previous season. Does that mean that at a Grand Slam now, she's going to do something that she's not done before?
Oh, that's a good question. First of all, she's done something she's not done before by helping me to get some points early on in the season in the predictions in the newsletter. So thanks for that, Aryna. But, I mean, first of all, just about her performances, I'll let Matt give you the details because he's watched more of her matches than I have. I did watch last night while I was preparing the agenda for this. I decided to go back and watch some of the match against Sakkari because I missed that at the time. And I couldn't quite believe the scoreline, you know, how one-sided it looked, given how well Sakkari had played. We were talking about her the other day and all the winners she'd been hitting. And I was thinking, well, how come she hasn't made an impact against Sabalenka? And it was like watching a cartoon of a superhero, a Marvel film, something like that, where no matter what you throw at the character, Michi is just dismissing it as though it's nothing, as though she's got her shields up, nothing can penetrate, and by the way, she's also got weapons that can blow you off the court. And that's what she was doing to Sakkari. She was treating her like a pea shooter. I shouldn't be taken aback because I've seen her win Wuhan a couple of times. Very similar court. Nigel Sears told me yesterday that the court was lightning fast. He was over there with Annette Kontaveit, who'd lost in this first round to Kudermetova. And I was trying to work out, well, why is Sabalenka so awesome at the moment? And I think the speed of the court, she in a fast court, if she's on, I don't see how you beat her, really. But it's focus, it's confidence. And I still can't quite understand the difference between her really good days like this and her absolutely appalling days, which often seem to happen at Grand Slams, where she loses to somebody you can't believe. But I do feel that going into this Australian Open, she's a real contender for the title. She's not the favourite to me. She's in a pool of players that I could definitely see winning it.
And we've got a name for that pool of players, David.
What's this
she's pool
in the
chat?
Mix. She's officially in the mix, folks.
Matt, in the mix? Let's remind ourselves of the mix definition.
The mixed definition is you would not be surprised if she won the title. I mean, there is one giant thing, and that she's never even reached a quarterfinal of a slam before. I would slightly say that she's not had that many really bad losses at slams. I've always put it that she just hasn't had any really good wins. She's lost to decent players, but not been able to find her best tennis at the slams for some reason. So it is quite a big step to say that she can then win the title without performing a bit better at slams. But we do see players do that quite a lot. It was quite the experience to be watching Sabalenka on one screen, and sort of on the screen next to it, I had the Australian Open qualifying up. And it was kind of like watching a cup tie, knowing that the Australian Open qualifiers had Man City or Liverpool in the next round. You're like, they are competing to have to play against someone in the form that Sabalenka's in. And she looks unstoppable when she plays like that. I've talked about finding Sabalenka matches quite difficult to watch when she's not at her best, because she's so erratic and there's no rhythm to it whatsoever. But there was an incredible rhythm to her matches. It was just her hitting winners the whole time. She had so much time on the ball. It felt instinctive. It was just awesome tennis. But there has been this block for her at the majors. It's not totally out of the ordinary what she did this week. Yes, it was carrying on from last season, which she's not really done before, but we have seen her play like this ahead of majors and not carry it through. So she's in the mix, but she can't, I don't think, be considered an absolute favourite given her record at the slams.
You can only have Sabalenka or Pliskova in your mix. Who do you have?
I have Sabalenka.
That's a great question. I do feel that, I mean, although there are many more years of service from Pliskova to kind of give you the feeling that she produces pre-slam and not during slam, there's a bit of a trend developing, a bit of a comparison in that way. I'd go Sabalenka if I could choose one of the two to be in it. Yeah. What about you?
I've been so burned by both of them before. I feel like a scorned lover with them both. But yes, I think Sabalenka.
I mean, it's not out of the question that she could just go and do what Świątek's done or Andreescu's done. Mm.
The speed of the courts case you make is quite compelling, though. The Australian Open, unless they've made changes this year, will be slower.
It has been. I think it has been a bit slower, hasn't it, in recent years?
Yeah, they had a couple of years where they sped it up, I think. But the last couple of years,
I can't remember what last year was.
I think it's been slower the last couple of
years. Yeah, certainly slower than the US Open. I think it's the slower of the two hard court majors. We're making a concerted effort, aren't we, to say majors rather than slams, because we've had a telling off about it from Billie Jean King. That's a little preview for you of Billie Jean King week next week. I feel every time I've said slams, I've had a little shudder at myself. I now feel very self-conscious about it.
I've had the same wince ever since I got ticked off about 15 years ago by Bud Collins for the same thing.
Oof.
The great broadcaster and journalist for the Boston Globe, who sadly no longer with us, lovely bloke. And just, you know, we've talked about him during Tennis Relived, but I always remember writing I might have written some sort of press release or something, or maybe daily notes back when I was at the ATP, and them going out to all the journalists and he clearly read every word, because he replied very politely, but just to say, a grand slam is something that Rod Laver and Donald Budge and Steffi Graf did. It's not the same. They're majors.
Copy. Mm. We're working on it. It's like the new pronunciation of Wawrinka. I'm still working on that.
I haven't got that down at all.
While we're in pronunciation corner, we have an amendment to make.
I have a mea culpa, actually, let's be honest. You know how I was, I mid-sentence told Catherine, actually, it's Sasha Bajin? Turns out it's not. It's Sasha Bajin, everybody. Sasha Bajin.
Yeah. We're back
Matt's looking at me as if to say, I mean, you could have just asked me.
No, I just find this whole thing very confusing. I woke up to a very entertaining stream of messages in which David revealed that the source for his for his sort of error was Sacha Baín himself.
And it was the same as the source of his correction of the error.
Yeah.
That's what I was very confused about.
Yeah. Well, it was an interview that he'd done with John Wertheim a couple of years back. And first question, John says, clear something up for us. How do we say your name? And as he said it, the phone line sort of crackled. And I thought he'd said Bajin. Turns out he hadn't. So I've been corrected by a number of people. Thank you, Twitter.
It has its uses. Correcting us all on our pronunciations apparently is one of them. So, yeah, apologies, Sacha Baín. We will never make that mistake again. Over in Delray Beach, we have our first men's winner of the year. It is Hubert Hurkacz. It's his second ATP title. He beat Sebastian Korda in the final. He's 23. He's now 35 in the world. His mother is a junior tennis champion. His uncles were both tennis players. His favourite actor is Jason Statham. Why am I reading out his bio?
I wrote this agenda, everybody. I thought this...
Why am I reading out his whole bio, David?
Catherine's only just found out what I've put.
But, why is the fact that his favourite actor is Jason Statham, lol, by the way, in our agenda, David?
Well, because it's lol.
Right,
what does that
okay.
mean again?
He hopes that his peers consider him thoughtful and kind to others, fiercely passionate about tennis, competitive, but never a sore loser.
Correct. Just so my mum knows, what does lol mean?
Laugh out loud. Not
laugh
lots
loud,
of love.
Yeah.
And
no.
As David Cameron once said.
The reason I did this is because I watched some of that final, the latter stages of it, and I suddenly thought about Hubert Hurkacz.
You thought, who's his favourite actor?
I thought, I've known this guy for a couple of years as a player who's in the top 50, and I've watched some of his matches, and I like watching him play, and I don't feel like I know anything about him. So I went and looked on his bio to see... They said it was his second title, so I went and decided I'd look up what the first one is. I now can't remember what it is. Winston Salem, right, okay. But I did find out that his favourite actor was Jason Statham. And it was just quite interesting to read up a little bit about him.
Do you feel like you know him better now?
A little bit, yeah.
It's important to know where people stand on Jason Statham. I think it's a good marker for how you view people.
I wasn't expecting that, I must say. But I felt encouraged to go and look him up because the commentators for the match were Simon Reed and Mars McLagan, who were just great company as commentators. It's not everybody I feel like you feel that about when you're watching a tennis match. I mean, I'm sure I can irritate the pants off everybody who's watching when I'm doing a match. But Simon Reed and Miles, they were great. And they were giving me little bits of info about these players that I didn't know. And I realised, yeah, I just don't know that much about Hubert Hurkacz. Where does he figure in all of it? How far is he going to go in the world, do you think?
Hang on, I asked the questions here, David.
I'm just curious.
Top 20.
Do you feel illuminated, Matt, in your knowledge of Hubert Hurkacz now? Do you feel like you know him better, thanks to David's extensive research?
I didn't feel like Hubert Hurkacz was top of my list in terms of gaps of knowledge.
What do you know about him?
Well, I feel like he's quite private. He's under the radar. He won the Paris doubles last year with Auger Aliassime. That was a fun pairing. He gave a very nice quote this week about Iga Świątek's impact in Poland and how kind of inspiring that is to him and how great it is to see her doing what she's doing. He kind of looks a bit like Andy Murray on the court. He's kind of a mix of Andy Murray and Kevin Anderson, I think, the way he hits the ball. Yeah, I mean, just the technique on his backhand is very similar. Just to look at him, the way he stands is quite Murray-esque. He's kind of one of those players who has probably done more than the attention he's received, I would say. He's had quietly gone about his business and had really solid results without anything groundbreaking. Sort of steady progress.
Consistency isn't sexy.
Exactly.
That's why we haven't been talking about it.
Who was it who said that again?
Matt.
Oh, yeah.
About Wendy
and
Turnbull.
And subsequently, people everywhere.
God, you know loads about Hubert Hurkacz, Matt. I'm glad I asked.
Mm. I didn't see the final, though. I was watching Fulham. I did not see the final. But I did see one with an excellent lob against Corder.
Oh, that was a shank.
Oh, was it a shank? Oh, okay.
I think it was a shank, yeah.
Who has the greater potential, Hubert Hurkacz or Sebastian Corder? He was a bit impeded by injury in the final, Corder, wasn't he? But wins for him this week over John Isner, who won't be travelling to Australia, by the way. Tommy Paul, Cameron Norrie in the semis. He's not going to be going to Australia either, Sebastian Corder. He made the decision to play Dari Beach rather than entering qualies for Australia. But who he's obviously younger than Hurkacz. Who has the greater potential?
That's a good question.
I have no idea.
Right, then moving on to Antalya.
I would say Corder. I think Corder's making some real strides. He's a lot younger, isn't he? Isn't he about 3 or 4 years younger?
Yes.
I like Corder a lot. He's very smooth and easy to watch, and I feel like there's quite a lot more to come from him.
Yeah, the reason I think I say that about Hurkacz is 6'5", and he doesn't feel 6'5". He doesn't feel like a big guy out there to me, really. Corder has a bit more presence and a bit more swagger, and he's a bit more confident. I don't know how much that matters. I mean. But I'm not convinced that Hurkacz will own these big stages in the way that he would need to.
Alex de Minaur has become a title winner at the start of 2021. He won the Antalya title. He defeated Alexander Bublik in a very much curtailed final. 2-love in a retirement at that stage from Bublik. He beat Goffa in the semi-finals. He'd beaten Nicholas Basilashvili. He's 21. He's ranked 23 in the world. He has a tattoo of 109 on his chest. He would be a golfer. He would be a golfer if not a tennis player. And he supports Real Madrid.
It's good having me doing the agenda, isn't it?
isn't that his Australian Davis Cup number or something?
Yes. He's the 109th player to be selected for the Davis Cup team of Australia.
Mm.
He's tattooed it on his chest. I love that.
Do you know how big? I'm surprised by this. He didn't strike me as a chest tattoo kind of guy. Do you know how big it is?
It's small.
Small. Okay, we're not talking about sort of Harry Styles type thing.
I read his bio rather than examining his chest.
Right. Well, what part of his chest is it on, Matt?
It's near one of his nipples.
on a pectoral muscle?
Yes.
Right, okay. Well, anyway, that surprised me. Who has the greater potential out of Alex de Minaur, Sebastian Corder, and whoever the other one was, Hubert Hurkacz?
De Minaur.
So we think de Minaur has more potential than Sebastian Corder?
I think so.
I don't know that. I don't know enough about Cordy.
Yeah, no. I would.
That's because you
I
didn't put
agree.
His bio in the agenda, David.
No.
Who's his favourite actor?
I'll look into that.
Okay.
I mean, de Minaur has been a very, very solid player now for a while, and had his best slam result at the US Open last year. He always starts the season well. Normally, obviously, in Australia, and last year he actually took himself out of the Australian Open, didn't he, by getting injured at the ATP Cup. He had some real momentum behind him. So I hope he can stay fit. And
the previous
year
he'd won the title in Sydney, hadn't he? And then got scheduled to play the next day at the Australian Open and ended up losing in the first round, didn't he?
No, I think he lost in the third round. He
was running on fumes.
He was one of Nadal's victims.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, that doesn't quite work then. Ignore me.
I can watch de Minaur play against lots of different types of players. Some players I only like in certain matchups, but de Minaur I could watch pretty much against anybody because he's got the speed of a counterpuncher, and yet he's got the attitude of an offensive strike first player.
Yeah, it's the attitude with de Menor which really impresses me whenever I watch him play.
If it's a very weird Australian Open, a la the current Premier League season, could he be in the mix?
No. I don't think he's in the mix yet.
I just feel that in the men's game, there are two or three that are so much better than everybody else.
That even the if mix it's weird. Very,
it's just very small, the mix.
It would have to be so weird.
You know, even without Nadal playing and without Federer and with Djokovic getting himself defaulted, we still ended up with the next one winning it, didn't we, really? And I think I could definitely see de Menor with a decent draw getting to the quarterfinals, but I can't see him beating one of those guys.
Sebastian Korda, his idols growing up were Radek Stepanek, Rafael Nadal and his father. He's got a cat named after Nadal called Rafa. His favourite surface is clay. His favourite shot is his backhand. His favourite tournament is the US Open. If he wasn't a tennis player, he would have liked to have been a hockey player or golfer. And he supports the Boston Bruins in NHL.
Good, aren't they? Bios.
His sisters are real stars.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Jessica and Nelly.
Yes.
Great name, Nelly. Like the elephant.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Right then, so that is tour level results wrapped up for you. We've of course also had the Australian Open qualifying events happening this week, both the men's and the women's. Several interesting results on the men's side. You've got Bernard Tomic, who's managed to qualify 7-6 in the third over John Patrick Smith. He played 3-3 setters.
Victor saved a match point in the second one.
Great.
Only so, fans to Melbourne Park. What a journey.
Yeah, I mean, he really seemed committed. And I can only interpret that as evidence that his porn career has not panned out as he had hoped.
It's a great troll, isn't it? The one-time Australian starlet who they had videos of at 15, you know, as the next big thing. And here he is having, in the view of many, just tossed his career away. And he's 28 and he's not done anything. He's not even tried to do anything for a year. And he comes out and he plays like a warrior and gets into the main draw.
Viktor Troitsky, age 34, has qualified. Sergei Stakhovsky, age 35, has qualified. And Carlos Alcaraz, Mats Garçon du jour of a couple of years ago, has also qualified. And it's going to be very interesting to see where he lands up in the draw, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was reading actually that he's the youngest player to qualify for a slam since Bernard Tomic actually did it about 10 years ago.
Really?
But it's impressive because he lost, didn't he, in French Open qualifying. And that was kind of felt a little bit like a letdown at the time. He'd had all this momentum on the Challenger Tour and obviously so young, it's not a letdown. But to then go to Australian Open qualifying and qualify on a hard court, I think is very, very impressive from him.
First player born in 2003 to qualify for a Grand Slam.
Ridiculous.
And a year ago, he was 490 in the world, and he's won five titles since then, three of them challengers. He's very exciting, isn't he? I kind of want to watch whole matches of him now. I've only seen the odd highlight and mainly heard what Matt's had to say, but I just sort of want to watch a match now.
Well, you will have the opportunity to do that in the middle of the night in a few weeks' time, David.
There was a lot of teenagers who qualified. There was Clara Burrell, there was Whitney Osigwe, there was Olga Danilovic, all qualified from the women's tour. And as you said, there's also some older players qualifying. Lots of interesting stories, as always, at qualifying, and one of them being the age discrepancy.
Maya Sharif, remember her from the French Open? She's qualified for the main draw, and that's really exciting because she's one that stuck in my mind from the French Open.
Remind me.
She played a very good match against Pliskova. I think she won the first set. It was a really long tie break. She won it. She was the first Egyptian ever to reach the main draw of a slam, and now she's qualified again for the Australian Open. And I think Reem Abalil pointed out that she won 29 of her last 35 matches, if you include sort of all levels. So she's really, really showing that she belongs at this level.
Svetlana Peronkova qualified, to expect her to tear through the draw and unexpectedly reach the semi-finals or something. She's extraordinary.
She just only plays slams now. She's only played three.
And plays them brilliantly.
Plays them brilliantly. Quarterfinal, round three, and now she's qualified for the Australian Open. Excellent.
That's brilliant.
And the one biggest story, and one that I've found just quite overwhelming, really, and how uplifting and needed it's been, is that of Francesca Jones. You might have heard about this story because there's been quite a lot of cut through with it, particularly in the UK. I've heard it reported on various news outlets because it's just an extraordinary story. We did mention it in our last pod at the end of last week as qualifying was just getting underway. She's a 20-year-old British player, the world number 241. She's born without three toes and two fingers. She was told as a young child that she would never be able to play tennis professionally. And she has qualified in, to borrow David's word, ruthless fashion for a major for the first time in her career. The story's been picked up on by lots of people. She was tweeted by Kim Clijsters, who said, "What an incredible story. Good luck." She said that to her on Twitter. She suffers from a condition called EED, ectrodactyl ectodermal dysplasia, which is a rare genetic condition that altered the formation of her hands and feet while also leaving her with a cleft palate at birth. She trained at the Sanchez Casal Academy in Spain, which is the same academy that Andy Murray came through as a youngster. And she said after her win over China's Jia Jing Lu by 6-6-6-1 in the final round of qualifying, she was asked, and this is from a piece by Simon Briggs in The Telegraph, she was asked if she felt she had proved that doctor wrong that told her she wouldn't be able to play professional tennis at the age of 8. She said, "I'm not bothered about proving people wrong. I'd rather prove to people that you can. and switch the perspective there. The first one is out of revenge, and I'm not playing out of revenge. I'm playing to have a positive impact on the people who hopefully read my story. I do hope people can take some, I don't want to say tips, because I'm not one to give tips either, but I'd love people to take some strength from my story to build their own. And honestly, Francesca, I do. I mean, you know, I've got absolutely no experience I can liken to hers in terms of her physical condition or anything, but just the will and determination of the young woman is something to behold. And it's so, I love how reflected it is in the way she plays tennis. She plays this completely fearless, gutsy style of tennis, and it's overwhelming. It's infectious to watch, and I really feel uplifted by her story. I think she's incredible.
Yeah, she comes across to me as either unaware or uninterested in a lot of the trappings of the sport, really, and the little bits and bobs around the edges. She doesn't seem to be interested in social media particularly. She doesn't have current accounts that she's posting to. And yeah, there's a real business-like air to her tennis. And it seemed as, I mean, we haven't had a chance to interview her yet, but it'd be lovely to talk to her in the future. But the way she goes about it all is just, yeah, ask me the questions, I'll answer them. Give me the tennis balls and I will knock them away for winners. And you better beat me because I ain't stopping. And midway through one of those matches, I think the second match, I watched the second and third matches of qualifying. And the second one, she hit a shot and she hit a winner. And she just said, "Come on, Fran." in this empty stadium, and I thought, you know, she's just not bothered how that might sound to people. That is what she needs to do, and she's given it everything in these matches. And when she played that third one, and she was, I think, 6-love, 3-love up, and there was a game of several deuces, and she lost the one and only game that she lost in the match. She looked so irritated by having actually lost a game, and then just knuckled down, won the match. And it was great. Great to see.
And if she says her goal is to have a positive impact on people, well, I mean, of course, without question, she's doing that. But I'd just like to also read out an email that's come in from one of our listeners, Katie Morrison, who says this: "Hello, David, Catherine, Matt and Billie Jean," who's suddenly being a delight over there. She says, "Francesca Jones is someone whose career I follow. And today she made me smile from ear to ear all afternoon. She has a genetic condition from the same family of conditions that my own is part of. My own condition presents itself in different ways from Francesca Jones's, but we are one family, a family of those who have an ectodermal dysplasia condition. Most people I've come across have never heard of ectodermal dysplasia family of conditions. Of the many doctors, nurses and dentists I've seen in my life, there are few that have seen a case before meeting me. As a lifelong tennis fan, watcher, not player, seeing someone with an ectodermal dysplasia condition in the sporting world reminds me that whatever our passions, we cannot let our genetic condition hinder us. Instead, it must drive us to do better. Sorry, my email is more like a novella. I'm sure you're very busy, but I couldn't contain my joy and my cat didn't get excited enough when I told him. Thanks for all you do, folks. And cuddles to Billie Jean." Not sure she's earned those at the moment, but she'll get them anyway. Thank you, Katie, so much for sending us that email and for allowing us to share it as well. And I hope Fran Jones hears. I hope Fran Jones listens, just because that would be cool. But it would be doubly cool if she got to hear about Katie. And I'm sure there are other Katies out there, many of them. And yeah, I can't wait to see her in main draw action at the Australian Open. And she doesn't care who she draws in the first round. She's just up for it, isn't she? Whatever it is, she's up for it.
She's never even been to Australia before. And yeah, wow. she said I'll take on another qualifier or Serena Williams. Just love that attitude. And it would be impressive anyway for a player ranked 241 in the world to qualify for the Australian Open. When you then consider her condition, and it just is even more impressive. And let's continue to follow her story.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about the marginal gains in this sport,
yeah,
you know, we're talking about a completely non-marginal loss that she is playing with. Fingers and toes, you know, they're really important. She has to play with a completely different type of racket. She's had to learn to move differently. Everything has to be different. I mean, it just blows my mind, really. Of all the sports that she could be excelling at, it's, it's, you know, it's one of the most difficult anyway, and probably one of the most difficult to adapt to with her condition. I find it extraordinary.
Quite interesting that she did put some of those experiences with a condition as perhaps a foundation for her mental strength, and that may have become something that she's able to use now as a positive.
Mm. So my big tennis wish, not prediction, but my wish is that we get to see more of Fran Jones at the Australian Open.
Yeah.
Sorry, can I just say, how did you find watching qualifying? Because I really liked it, that totally stripped back version of tennis. I think I've slightly struggled at times with this, with tennis being stuck in between, and I totally understand all the measures that are in place to try and make the sport safe at the moment and just to be able to play. But when tennis is at its best, it's between sport and spectacle, isn't it? And part of the reason you enjoy it is because it's a form of entertainment. And I think the entertainment value has kind of been diminished a little bit. But actually, I think the events I've enjoyed the most are the ones that have been the most stripped back in a way, like Lexington and the US Open. They seem to fit the time the best. I remember Mary Carrillo talking about this right back at the start when tennis was coming back, that she wants something real and authentic. Mm. And it felt like the most real and authentic tennis you could get. You know, it was kind of making me anxious with the balls just at the back of the court lying around. I was worried the players were going to trip over them, but it was a reminder.
Especially Tomic.
Yeah, he just lazily put them at the back. And it was a reminder that there were no ball boys. There was only one line judge at the back and there was an umpire. And it felt so intimate, and there was no commentary. It was just a feed, and I don't know, there was something nice about it,
and it felt completely apt for qualifying, which is tennis at its rawest. There's something really brutal about qualifying for a Grand Slam, how high the stakes are somehow, but in this really raw way, and that felt amplified by the circumstances. It was fitting somehow. I felt the same about it, Matt.
Well, she, Francesca Jones, was comparing it to reality TV, like an X Factor or something. You have this massive breakthrough moment, and qualifying can be the making of you. I mean, even just financially, that has guaranteed her £55,000, which, heck of a lot of money for these players, heck of a lot of money for anybody, but particularly these players who are really just struggling to make it, and particularly during a pandemic when all the prize money is going to be down for the next however many years. There are so many wonderful storylines at any qualifying competition, and if you just look around and attach yourself to a player and decide that they're the one you're going to follow, they will have a backstory of their own. They're not in the main draw. They don't just get in and get these prize money checks. They may go home, they may go all the way out to Abu Dhabi or Dubai, and then have nowhere else to go for the next few weeks because they didn't qualify. And then what? And just one other player I just wanted to mention briefly was Rebecca Marino of Canada, who qualified for the main draw, and it'll be her first main draw at a Grand Slam, at a major, since 2013, 7 years. And you may remember, I mean, she's 30 years of age now, prodigious talent as a junior, made some strides, made a breakthrough, but just found the online abuse that she received and all the awful things that can come with being in the public eye too much. And she just pulled away from the sport. She suffered with depression. She didn't play for quite a while, and it's just built a comeback. And here she is now again in a main draw of a major tournament.
And I think these were her first matches for 18 months.
Is that right?
Yeah, because she'd made a bit of a comeback, as you said, 2 or 3 years ago, but had a injury and she hadn't actually played for 18 months. And I don't think she even lost a set in qualifying. Amazing.
That's extraordinary.
Wow. Oh, so many good stories in qualies. It's great. Yeah, I really enjoyed them too. Sort of sad that they're over. But more tennis to come in a couple of weeks' time. Until then, we can look to the future, make predictions, have hopes, have dreams. People on Twitter, David, have been making their big tennis predictions for 2021. What have they been saying? A cup of something is appearing behind you, David.
Oh, fantastic. Look at that. My big tennis prediction is that some lovely person, i.e. my wife, will bring me a cup of coffee. And that's what I've got. No, but I did appeal for our listeners' big tennis predictions for the year, and I've got about 200 replies. Here's just a small sample. Sam says Del Potro will win three slams. Jim Boyle says Azarenka will win a slam. What do you think? Azarenka, would you sign up for an Azarenka slam right now?
No, but she's very much in the mix.
Okay.
To do that.
There's two tiers, aren't there? Yes, you will, and mix.
Yeah.
No sign.
Okay. Karen McGlynn says Andy, I assume she means Murray, will knock out one of the big three early in a slam to prove a point, obviously. Imagine that. Imagine if Andy Murray just derailed.
That is something we haven't had in his comeback, isn't it? Him facing.
Yeah.
We've had him facing Wawrinka. Yeah. It'd be good going to do that in Australia just at the moment.
Yeah. We'll find out whether he manages to make it. And finally, Vickery Spreadbury says, if I'm going big, I'm going for narrative. It's Tokyo 2021. Novak, mental slump, out early. Nadal, injury. Roger throws everything at it, almost loses to Medvedev in the semi, finally manages to win a big match point, plays injured in the final, but drags himself to gold.
That's a detailed prediction.
Very specific.
Are we sure we haven't strayed into my big tennis wish territory?
No.
Rather than prediction.
Well, maybe we have. Maybe I've combined them.
Right, okay.
For that last one.
Okay.
There you go.
Anyone here want to make a big tennis prediction right here, right now, for 2021?
I'll give you two.
Yeah.
Oh, you can. Yeah, Matt's got one for me then. Go on.
Medvedev will win the slam.
Mm-hmm.
And you're gonna tell me this is a cop out, but I'm gonna go with it anyway. A woman will win two slams.
Is that big?
Well, it hasn't happened since 2016. We've had four different winners of slams every year since then.
But Osaka won back to back slams.
So
she's the one who'd do it.
Yeah, if I had to say, I would probably say Osaka. But I think if Andreescu's fit, there's a possibility there.
What about Świątek?
Yeah. This is why I've said unspecified woman.
It's good, this, isn't it?
David, last train's leaving the station for a big prediction.
Sabalenka's going to win one.
Oh,
oh wow. Catherine?
I'm not getting reeled in by Sabalenka again. I've been burned too badly. I think two slams will be won by non-big three players.
Okay. Yeah, I like that.
Mm. There we go.
Ooh.
Do you think they will most likely be the hard court slams?
Yes.
Mm.
Of course. Yes. Most likely. Right. Let's stop with unsolicited predictions. We've got 2 weeks to be making these. Let's remind you that Bentley is our weekly mascot for this week. More info about Bentley in our newsletter, which went out yesterday. Was it yesterday or was it Tuesday? It went out recently, and it was an absolute corker. If you want to sign up for the newsletter, just do. Oh, my mum wants to be added to the newsletter mailing list. She's annoyed that my dad gets it and she doesn't. So if you could make that happen,
I'll send
please.
Send her the link.
Thanks very much. Rogue is David's mascot. Lovely Rogue. Some great photos of Rogue emerging on Twitter this week. Zeus is my mascot. I'll say it every week for the next 50 weeks. King of the gods. And Scouse and Mousel, searching for the limelight again, is Matt's mascot. You found it, Scouse or Mousel, don't worry. Chris Albert Lee is our executive producer, and he is a top bloke. And just finally, we have shout outs, Matt.
Yes, for Hannah Dunning.
Hi, Hannah.
Hello, Hannah.
Thanks for your support.
I've got nothing on Dunning.
Shall I move on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not in a bad way,
no,
just in a, you know,
not.
Cool.
Cracking name.
Good stuff, yeah. Solid.
I'm afraid I've got even less to go with the next one. I just have first name of Ryan, but to help Ryan identify himself, I know he's backer number 24.
Oh, thanks, Ryan.
Right. Do you think he has 24 tattooed just above his nipple?
He does now.
Let's find out.
Matt's not going to be able to do the third shout out.
Oh no, but I need to, because it's an important one. Last but not least, it is for Ina Graneman.
Oh, hello. Hey. Ina. Ina's great.
Ina was an intern for us a couple of years back, and she's wonderful, and we love her lots. And we like Ryan too. Cheers, Ryan. But no, thanks to everybody. But yeah, Ina's a star.
Yeah. Thank you, Ina. Hope all's well. And thanks for your support. Thanks to everyone for your support. One more week of the Kickstarter. 2 weeks of quarantine coming up. And the first of those for us is going to be Billie Jean King Week. It won't disappoint, folks. So join us on Monday for the first episode of Billie Jean King Week. And, of course, after that is Australian Open Relived Week. And then it's tennis, 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 exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. So thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting. We're thinking of you. Stay well. Stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.